Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the French. So we're continuing with France. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery,
we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushier Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Thank you, bus people. Daylight saving time team, and those bus people are really keyed up.
They are. Oh, yes, they are. And it's still bright outside. Last week, it was dark at this time, and so they were outside in the dark, and, you know, everybody's fumbling for things. And,
right.
You know,
showing their drinks, which is sad. You know.
Yeah, that's the worst part of it. This is great. So it's light outside. It's a beautiful day today. Sunny, warm. What is it, 100 and something degrees outside? I forgot what it was.
102, I think.
102, yeah. That's our that's our spring is here.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was humidity. Temperature was only 84.
But it feels like with the
humidity. It feels like, yeah.
Yes. Wow, fantastic. Well, welcome. This is our show. And I just put it on Twitter. I just put it on Twitter, but I haven't seen that come through here yet. So
tweeted.
Let me check it. So today we're still on. Trying to type. We're still on Pennsylvania, which is cool because we're going to be there for. You're saying like quite a long time.
You know, there's a lot of wineries, and I hope we start getting people talking to us. But we're going to be there a while.
Not easy, huh?
No.
Well, it's not harvest or anything, is it?
No, it's just, you know, they've been busy. They're, you know, people haven't responded. I usually email, as you know, I don't know if the listeners know, but we email like a week before and tell them about the program and ask them to email us back. And then I try to follow up with a phone call on most of them, and it just, I'm not getting emails back. I'm not getting a hold of the people that can talk, and especially Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania now is our eastern time zone. So 7 o'clock at night, Eastern, is a difficult time because they're off work, and they are home with the families, or they are at meetings or whatever. And Thursday night seems to be a pretty busy meeting night, I've found.
Yeah.
So for some reason, I just haven't been able to get anyone on the program yet. I'm not giving up, though. I mean, if you are Pennsylvania fans, please stay with us. Or if you know any wine, if you know a winery up there that you go to all the time, I've had people come into the winery down here, Florida Estates Winery, in the last three weeks, and I've been telling them about the radio program and that we're in Pennsylvania, and I'm getting suggestions for different wineries that they attend all the time, and they say, call these people, they're really nice and all that. So I've been trying to break Pennsylvania down into sections, the Southwest and different things. I'm going to throw that out the window. I'm just going to get a hold of Pennsylvania and see what we can find in Pennsylvania. That's it. and we'll see.
And there's plenty of them out there, so we should get some kind of response because you're saying there's a lot of wineries in Pennsylvania.
143 wineries.
Wow. Yeah. So we should get something. Maybe next one. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, next week we'll hopefully have to. And also last week I was talking about Pennsylvania and the state stores. The Pennsylvania. State stores, I made a note here, I don't know where it is right now, but we were talking about how they sell all the stuff out of the state stores, and I asked the question, are they controlling the wineries that are in the state, each of the wineries individually or stuff like that, or how does that work? And I didn't have an answer to it, and I couldn't find anything. Well, I had people from Pennsylvania come in, and I started talking to them about state stores. And how they work is anything that's imported into the state, any alcohol that is imported into the state of Pennsylvania, is sold through the state stores. Mm. If you are a winery, you can sell directly out of the winery. And you can ship, but not out of the state of Pennsylvania.
Wow.
From what I understand, and the shipping into it, I don't know. It's just Pennsylvania is strange on their laws. I'm sorry, anybody listening from Pennsylvania, but you all need to catch up because, actually, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I would like to have 2 minutes before every state legislature in this country. And not even 2 minutes. All I need is 30 seconds. I would get up and say, ladies and gentlemen, wine and the wine business and wineries are a multi-billion dollar business. Your states are hurting for money, as is every state in the nation. As long as you keep battling the wine industry, you're not going to get part of that money. If you work with them, it's going to bring in more revenue. That's it. I mean, if they just think about that. In Pennsylvania, what I'm finding out so far, Pennsylvania is one of the worst. I was looking on Free the Grapes, and Pennsylvania is always, they're always trying to work with Pennsylvania to loosen the laws and stuff. I don't know. I just, go back to all the antiquated laws that we have in this country about alcohol, and it makes us start thinking about 1161 again, and hopefully that's going to die a agonizingly slow death.
Okay. We can say that it's not a human or an animal or anything.
It's just a legislative bill. That's all it is.
Yes, not your neighbor bill. It's a written bill. So no,
it's a written bill. It can the House of Representatives in the United States.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that.
I didn't want people to what?
No, we are start just getting our first whole batch of emails.
Hey. If that works.
Yeah, really.
It's been pretty good. Well, you said, I don't know if maybe we'll discuss it later, but you were contacted from someone in Mexico. So
yes, I was.
It is working.
So. Since you brought it up, let's go ahead and talk about
which I was worried about.
I'm not saying you shouldn't have brought it up. That's great. That's why you were there.
Changing the flow of the conversation.
Yeah, kept it going. That's good.
Okay.
We were getting away from that and getting back into all about wine here. The other stuff about wine. Oh. No, I did get an email from someone. Robert Kraft is his name. And Robert, if you hear us on archives or however you listen, and actually he does say he listened to us on archives on podcast, thanks for the email. We got a couple of days ago, but let me read you Robert's email. It says, in one of the Oregon wine podcasts, you asked for new names for port and sherry. Now, this isn't what he said in his mail. I'm going to throw this in here. Yes, I did. I asked for names. We can't call it port and sherry anymore, and I'll cover that again in a minute after I go through the rest of his email. He says, my suggestions follow. Port is a fortified, and he wrote fort, F-O-R-T in capitals, fortified wine. How about Forto, F-O-R-T-O, as a new name? Which, the more I say it, the more I'm starting to like it. Close to port, and it might work. It suggests both port wine and fortification. Sherry is harder. It is aged in the Solera system, which is, if you're not familiar, I think we've talked about the aging of sherry and how it works with the barrels and everything sitting out in the sun, and that's what ages them. And it's called the Solera system. So maybe some variation on Solera could be used. For example, Solera, S-O-L-E-R-I, as opposed to S-O-L-E-R-A. So those are his suggestions. This is, again, from Bob Kraft, and he's in Hihek. No, I said that wrong.
Hihek?
Hihek. Okay, yes. Hihek.
Hihek.
Hihek. Yeah, that's the...
South of Guadalajara.
H-J-I-C, for all of those who know how to pronounce it.
South of Guadalajara.
Yeah, coast of Guadalajara. In Mexico. So, Bob, thanks for listening. Thanks for the suggestions. I will put that on the list, and we'll see what else we come out with. But I tend to like that Fordo. Solera, you're right. Sherry is harder. What this came from, and if you haven't heard the program that we're talking about, let me cover this real quickly here because we do have some time since we don't have a guest. The agreement was written up, and actually it was adopted in 2005, the declaration was signed. It's called the Designation of Wine Decoration. It was signed in 2005 by the U.S. government. It's Title 26, Subtitle E, Chapter 51, Subchapter F, Part 3, number 5388. What this does basically is it stops the generic use of a lot of wine names. Over the years, we have called wine by names like champagne and sherry and cognac and port and sauternes and stuff like this. We've called these names in the United States by those names. The reason we did is because back in, the Treaty of Versailles, which was signed back in 1919, gave the Champagne region of France and the fermentation method used an international trademark on those agreements. However, back then, the United States legal definition called semi-generic allowed the United States to use a lot of these names as a generic term as long as it was next to the actual appellation of origin. In other words, a California champagne, a New York champagne, a New York port, a California sherry, all these, as long as you designated this area that it comes from, the appellation it came from, then you can use those names. In 2006, the United States agreed with the EU or European Union, stating that they would no longer use those names. So therefore, it stops us from using a bunch of the generic names that we've used for a couple hundred years or more. So, the following names are now not allowed. And these consist of the names Burgundy, Claret, Chablis, Champagne, Chianti, Malaga, Marsala, Madeira, Moselle, Port, Retsina, Rhine wine or Hock, Sauternes, Haute Sauternes, Sherry, or Tokay. Now, a lot of those you probably don't see too much anyway, and it's not going to be a big deal if we don't use them anymore. A lot of them we do see, one of them being the Port and Sherry, which is probably the most common ones. Champagne is still grandfathered in. And as of 2006, all the old places that use these names are still grandfathered in. They don't have to change them. But as of 2006, the Alcohol and Trade and Tobacco Bureau will not approve any labels with those names I just read on it. So therefore, we have to come up with other names, something that people can understand, something that people use. Now, sparkling wine is pretty much accepted as a champagne. It's been used for years, and people always come into the winery and say, oh, you can't use champagne. You got to use sparkling wine. And I said, yeah, you're right, but the United States doesn't really, you know, are serious about that. Well, now they have to be serious about it. So it is sparkling wine. I've asked people, because of the fact that they got this new list here, and particularly for port and for sherry, to come up with new names. I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. And there are those out there also. There are those in the wine industry, and there's those not in the wine industry that want to stop the wineries that are grandfathered in to from having those names. They want to make it so that everybody has to change those names. I strongly disagree with that myself. We've had California champagnes that have been coming from some of the champagne cellars in California for a couple hundred years, literally. And to have them change it now would be an injustice to them and to everyone else. So the new names, and this is the regions that are affected. The EU, the European Union, agreed not to use any of the United States names. So they can't say Napa Valley on theirs. They can't say Washington, Oregon, Walla Walla, all that stuff, which, you know, I'm sure it really bothers them that they can't. But the regions that the EU stopped us from using, Champagne region, the Cognac region, and that's a commune where the cognac is produced, Douro, the region where port wine is produced, and Jerez, where sherry is produced. And so these are areas that we have to think of a new name. So I am throwing it out to you, my listeners, our listeners. Give me a new name. New name for port and a new name for sherry. We got one in from Bob. I just read port being Forto and sherry being Soleri. S-O-L-E-R-I, Soleri, I believe we would pronounce it. So if you have any suggestions, if you have any ideas, if you you know, want to throw your 2 cents worth in, then by all means, email me at allaboutwineBTR. Oh, I'm sorry, no, allaboutwine101. BTR is our Facebook page. allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And or you can go on the Facebook page, All About Wine BTR, and leave a post there. That would work also. But allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And let me know. Let me know what your ideas are. Let me know what you think. It can't be approved anymore. It's done. It's to the point now where we have to think of something. Something else has to be done. And I don't know what anyone's doing. We've talked to quite a few people, and the subject hasn't been brought up. I guess as I continue to talk to people, I'm going to start asking them if they have any ideas, because I don't know. It's going to be difficult, I think, to find something that everyone's going to be used to. And I don't think the public understands what's happening yet either. If you're listening to the program, you are probably a little bit more educated than most people out there. And so, therefore, you know what's going on. But I think overall, most people aren't really aware of it. I teach a class once a month, or actually a couple of times a month at the winery. And this is one of the subjects I bring up for a while, and people are shocked and surprised at that. So, used up a little bit more time than I expected to. But thank you, Bob, for the email. I'll pop one back to you and thank you on the email also. But we've got it started. Let's hear some more from you and what you have to say about it. So, any comments, Mike?
No. I was just thinking, is this information or this possible change, is that published in the industry news medias like the magazines or anything, or is it because I'm wondering if the wineries that are out there now, if they all know this is going on and this is a potential change to them.
That's a good question. I haven't seen anything. I ran across it originally in an Associated Press release in a newspaper, and I picked it up in a local newspaper, actually, that let me give them a kudos, Tampa Tribune. And the local newspaper had a little article in there on, let me see what date it was. I think it might have been a Sunday paper. And yes, it was. It was on a Sunday paper, which, you know, things are so big and things get buried in there. And I saw this in here, and that's when I started checking to it more, and I started digging to everything about it. And then I went online, and I found the actual law that was on made up for it and online. And that's when I called out in California, and I got a hold of, well, we had that interview with that girl. I'm sorry. Trump. I don't have
California?
Her name right. Yeah, from the Florida Wine Institute out there.
Oh, yeah.
California Wine Institute out there.
Yeah.
But we talked to her about it, and she filled us in on some information about it and all that. But I don't know. I don't know how many wineries know about it. I don't.
That was that was Gladys with the Wine Institute of California.
There you go, Gladys. Yeah. And Gladys was very informative, and she gave us a lot of information. But how many, I mean, she's with the Wine Institute of California. She probably would know that stuff and be on top of it. I don't know. That's a very good question, Mike, very good question. I don't know how many wineries actually know about it unless somebody decides to make a port or a sherry or anything and pop that name on the label and send it to be approved and get it kicked back at them. And then they might say, oh, why? What's going on? You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this thing was put into effect in 2006.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that really is quite some time ago.
And let's see.
It says here, well, wait a minute. Another article I printed out here, and I said it says the declaration was signed in July 2005. By four United States wine-growing regions and three European Union wine-growing regions. And then the list of signatories to the agreement expanded in March 2007 to include Sonoma County in just west of Napa and Paso Robles, Chianti Classico, Tokay, Victoria, Australia, and Western Australia signed the declaration at a ceremony in Washington, D.C., so that was in March 2007. So the original bill was signed in 2005. This is in July 2005. We're in March of 2012. We're almost 7 years into this thing. And, you know, I do a lot of reading and stuff on wines, and I look at trade journals, and I look at all this stuff, and I never saw this. I never saw anything about it. So I don't know. I don't know how many wineries know about it. I don't know how many people know about it. I'm sure obviously the people in these areas probably are aware of it, but it's good.
Well, what else just came to my mind that I don't know if we have probably need to do some research on this also is what would have been the repercussions if we didn't agree to this, you know, signing this. If those regions in the U.S. said, no, we're not going to sign it. We're going to call it port. We're going to call it, you know, the names that the EU is saying is forbidden. What would the repercussions be?
We have been for years, though. And they've been working on this bill, too, for a long time.
Right.
I think Gladys said that this is something that's been in the works before it was finally put together. It's been in the works for over 10 years.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the EU has been in existence for, what, 15, 20 years now? And she said it's just, you know, they've been talking about it for a long time, and this final drafter has been in the works for a long time until we finally got around to doing it.
But what if the U.S. hadn't signed or agreed to this agreement, what was Europe going to do? Were they going to put restrictions on, you know, shipping, exporting, importing? Would they, you know, what would Europe, obviously they came up with this idea. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
the EU did. Right.
Okay. What was our benefit, or what were they holding against us to say, yeah, you all better sign this, or else we're going to, you know, do something.
And from what I understand, the people I've talked to, and you know, I talked to a build out there at freethegrapes.org. Mm-hmm. And from what he said, it was something that's been working on for years. Mm-hmm. He said that the United States really didn't have anything to gain by this. He said they didn't have anything to lose by it, but mm-hmm. they didn't have anything to gain. And they said they did it to protect our interest in the wineries we have here in the United States. And I asked him, what protect what? I said, are they using the name Napa Valley and the French wines? He says, I don't know too much. He said, call, and then he threw me off to Gladys. And so, but according to him at freethegrapes.org, it wasn't a big benefit to the United States.
Right.
So,
but they signed it. You know, that's
but they signed it.
Yeah.
And other countries came out, like Australia. Australia's came on to it, too. And you can find Australian ports and sherries.
I don't know. It just...
Yeah, and I know.
It's almost like they're trademarking a word that you can't use this word because we're using it, you know. The EU is saying, well, we're using port, and it's this port, and you can't use this port anymore. I mean, it's just, you know, champagne. You can't call it champagne. Because it's almost like they own that word, and they can tell us, you know.
And this is what happened, too, with – this is basically why so many wines around the world are named after grapes instead of – see, back when the United States started, especially California, started to do their first wine crops, and they were using the Chardonnay grapes. And they said, we've got our first Chablis here. And France said, no, you can't call it Chablis. Chablis is our name. This is our region. We know the Chablis as Chardonnay grape, but that's ours. And so the United States says, okay, well, we'll just call it a Chardonnay because that's the name of that grape.
Huh.
And so France says, oh, okay, you can do that. And so that's why there's so many wines named after grapes, because we can't name them after regions, because all these other areas say, oh, no, you can't do that. That's our region. That's our stuff. But we still do generic terms for all those. We have a Chablis, you know, American-made Chablis, which is not a Chardonnay. It's just a white wine put in a jug, and Gallo sells tons of it. But it has nothing to do with the Chardonnay grape, and they don't say anything about it. And according to the grandfather rule, they can still do that. But if I want to make a jug wine and call it Chablis, I can't.
Hmm.
Because that's part of the names on the list.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know. It's just the whole thing, and the more, and I didn't put this paper away after we talked about it. I kept it with my main stack of notes here. I've got files of it and all that, but I kept this one out because it's still something that, I don't know. It's still something that I'd like to find out more about. I'd like to understand. I mean, I can go through and read the law here, and the law, I did on one program, and the law just is legalese. They talk about different things and all that stuff, and you, at the end of the thing, you go, huh? And, you don't know any more than you did when you started at the beginning of it. And I've read through this thing a couple of three times and looked at it and all that, and every time I read through this, I start getting more questions. I wish I knew somebody who knew more about this, and it doesn't seem, well, when we talked to Gladys, when I first called Gladys before she was on the program, she said, you don't want to talk to me about that, you want to talk to so-and-so, and she named somebody else, and I said, I don't care if I talk to you, if I talk to them or something, I just want somebody to come on the program and talk to us about this wine designation, about this wine designation law. And she says, well, let me check. She says, I'll call you back in 5 minutes. So 5 minutes later, she called me back. She says, well, so-and-so is not available. She says, I can talk to you. She said, but I don't know a lot about it. Well, if you remember the program, she was afraid she won't be able to talk for 15 minutes, and she ended up talking for 45 or 50 minutes.
Right.
You know, so she really, she had knowledge about it, but she said she didn't. So I'm almost tempted to call out to California again and see if I can't get someone at the California Wine Institute who knows more about this and just try to understand more about it. I just, again, every time I read it, it becomes more confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have more questions. And just like you did there, I mean, we're talking about it a little bit, and you're coming up with these questions too. And I don't know.
Well, that's what laws are designed to do anyway. They're supposed to be confusing, and you know, so you don't understand it, and then they just pass because you know I have no idea what I just signed. So it's a law.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Legal to
me. That seems to be the way it works. But this one, it affects so many people. And and I go back to the thing too. This was signed in 2005.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think that there would be more discussion about it among anybody and everybody. And I guess because we have so many ports and sherries and champagnes and stuff like that sitting on the shelves now that were grandfathered in, that we have not noticed that there's been none new.
Mm-hmm.
But new wineries starting up and new wineries trying to make it, I mean, if I have a port, I have my Florida strawberry port, which is legal because I say Florida strawberry port. But if I wanted to do a sherry now, I couldn't make a Florida sherry because I'm not grandfathered in on that one. I would have to call it something else.
Wow.
But yet, well, see, and then I'm not going to mention the winery because I don't want him to get in trouble because he might be. But I received one of the past wineries that we've discussed and talked with and all that. I've remained friends with him, and we've changed wines a couple times and stuff like that. And whenever I do something new or change a formula or something, I send it to him, and he came out with a sherry. And within the last year and a half, he came out with a sherry, and it says sherry on the label. Now, technically, it shouldn't.
What about misspelling it? And then what if he names it that, and he goes, well, that's my wife's name or my daughter's name. You can't tell me I can't put that on the bottle.
Yeah, well, that's
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. It's just the whole thing. I saw this little article and I read this. And I'm going, huh? And I started searching into it more, and I didn't realize it was going to give me that much confusion. Here we go. Let me read this little paragraphs here. Now, this might clarify. In fact, let me read this article here. The program tonight was going to be on Pennsylvania. If you tuned in for Pennsylvania, we're sorry, but we got on this subject and we're
happens discussing it.
Yeah, it's wine though. This is still wine. We can blame Bob. He wrote the email. Robert Kraft. He wrote the email. But let me read you this article I originally. This is from the Tampa Tribune, dated 2/5/2012. This was a month and a half ago, approximately. A month and 10 days ago, actually. Today's 15th. But the article says, wine producers seek truth in labeling. Efforts block use of Napa if grapes aren't from there. Well, of course, that's pretty much understood. The article says, and I'll try not to editorialize while I go through this because then you get confused with what's the article and what's me ranting. Napa Valley wine producers will go a long way to protect their good name, all the way to Thailand if necessary. That's the latest country that has awarded geographic indication status to Napa wines, which means they've agreed not to allow sales of wine labeled Napa if the grapes inside aren't from that California region. Now, this is from Thailand. It continues. The agreement reached late last year is part of a campaign for truth in wine labeling laws supported by a loose-knit cohort of wine regions around the world. Now, this says agreed last year, and this was dated 2/5/12, and so in late 2011 is what this article is saying. It goes on. Laws supported by a loose-knit cohort of wine regions around the world, a movement that has gotten a boost from general trend of consumers seeking ingredient integrity. which every once in a while, and again, I'm off the article here, but every once in a while, we hear about wines coming out of France that are supposed to be classic wines and all that, and they've been replaced by a cheaper brand or cheaper wine and less quality and stuff. And that happens. It pops up every couple, 3 years. We hear another thing where people buy wine that's the wrong, or not the wrong stuff, but it's been replaced with a lesser quality and all that. So it says here, and I continue, quote, what has been on our side is consumer awareness of and appreciation for the place where the product they're consuming comes from, and paying more attention to labels, paying more attention to how things are produced, said Linda Reef, executive director of the 420-member Napa Valley Vintners Association. For Napa Valley producers, the name campaign began during the late 1990s on a defensive footing when producers lobbied for a 2000 state law requiring that any wine with Napa in its name consists of at least 75% Napa grapes. That law was intended to stop Bronco Wine Company from selling non-Napa wine in bottles labeled Napa Creek and Napa Ridge, existing brand names that had been purchased by Bronco. Bronco sued, but the law was upheld. The case ended in 2006 after the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear Bronco's final appeal. Meanwhile, Bronco would go on to introduce the highly successful Super Value wine known as Two Buck Chuck, which actually is now Three Buck Chuck for all of you who are trying to find Two Buck. They raised the price a dollar. The Trade Association continues to stay on the defensive, monitoring labels with the name Napa on them and taking steps where possible. A current concern is the new Nava Valley wine region in China. That's spelled N-A-V-A, Nava Valley wine region. But they've also moved into the proactive side, winning geographical indication status from the European Union and India, and joining forces with a number of other global wine regions that have signed a declaration to protect regional wine names. So there you go. This is why they're doing it. They're joining in with the East, and this is the bill here. Trade groups representing 15 appellations have signed up so far, including the Rioja region in Spain, producers in Portugal, and the Wine Industry Association of Western Australia. The agreement on the name campaign isn't unanimous. A major issue has been the use of the term sherry, champagne, and port on U.S. brands. Those terms originated as styles of wine produced in Jerez, Spain, Champagne, France, and Porto in Portugal. In 2006, U.S. officials signed an agreement preventing new producers outside those regions from using the three designations, but existing brands were grandfathered in. That is something that continues to irk European producers. But the San Francisco-based Wine Institute, a trade association, denies that using terms such as American champagne is misleading, since producers are required to put on the label the geographic location of where the wine was produced. They also note that bottles labeled California champagne have been legally produced and sold in the United States since 1857. And that is the article. So, actually Napa is, the first one is saying, it has to be Napa, and the Supreme Court backed them. I mean, obviously, they backed them on that. But then they went to this agreement in 2006 now that's funny, because that's 2006 and the timeline doesn't really fit. Yes, it does. Bronco sued, but the law was upheld. The case ended in 2006 after the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear Bronco's final appeal. In 2006, was when the new law was made and went into effect. The designation of wines law went into effect in 2006. So it just follows suit there. So that's why they're doing it. Actually, Napa Valley is trying to designate, you know, which is really a shame because at the way global warming is going within the next 25, 30 years, Napa Valley is not going to be able to produce nearly as good of wines as they're doing now, and it's going to be up in southern Oregon and that area there, which we talked to a couple months ago, which have great wine areas and all that, which is going to take over. So, but I don't know.
I can understand part of that in, like, if I started growing, you know, the grapes or whatever for some reason, or, you know, I was in the industry in that part of it, and all of a sudden I produced a new wine and said, this is a Napa Valley wine, I can understand where they would get, you know, they would want some legal thing about it because it's not technically a Napa Valley region grown grape.
Right.
But you're talking about, okay, you're talking about port. Port is not an actual region, though, is it?
It is a loose region, but it is a Douro, Portugal region.
I mean, I'm saying if I hear the name port or a port wine, the first thing I'm thinking of, or the last thing I'm thinking of, is, oh, this is a place in Spain. Whereas if I hear something that says Napa Valley, then I'm going to think, oh, this comes from Napa Valley in some form.
And that's a very good point. That's an excellent point because when you think of Napa Valley, it's an AVA, and it's been there for a long time. And you know, people, I've been to Napa and all that. But when you think about port or sherry or champagne or any of those, you don't think immediately of the regions where they're from. You think a port is a fortified wine, or you think a sherry is a, you know, is this, or champagne is a bubbly, and, you know, and that's what you think of. So
that's it. I mean, I never put those two together and think, oh, it's champagne, it must be made over there, you know.
I guess maybe the argument could be on that too, is the fact that we have destroyed the origin of the name because of the fact that we call it champagne here in the States, or port, or sherry, or any of the others.
Yeah,
and so maybe that's, you know, another argument on that direction. But I agree with you, though. I don't. Whenever I pick up a champagne, I don't immediately start thinking of the Champagne region of France and the classic method of champagne of. I don't pick it up and say, is this a French champagne? I look at it and, you know, and I see, you know, whatever the designation is on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think.
I
don't know, the whole thing. I'm going to have to do more research on this thing because as we're talking about it more, it raises more questions.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And what time is it? 7:42.
Yeah, 7:43.
So Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. So we used up most of the show talking about that. Pennsylvania. Yeah. Thank you, Robert, for your email. It was a good email, and it got on the. And I promise you, if anyone else sends me suggestions, we will not spend most of the show talking about it. But that, it's just some stuff that I'm confused about. And people don't know about this yet.
Mm-hmm.
This is something else. People come into the winery. I get in front of my class. I 30, 40 people in the class, and I start telling them about this stuff, and they all look at me like, huh? What? When did that happen? And, I, you know, 2006. I mean, you know, that was 6-7 years ago when this law went into effect. And so I don't know. It's I will check into it more, and we will discuss it further in the future. But if you have a suggestion for a name for a port or sherry, by all means, allaboutwine101@gmail.com, and let me know, because it's got to change. Let me talk about Pennsylvania quickly here. A couple of wineries. I went up to the northeast. Now, what they call the northeast is that little bitty finger that sticks up and touches Lake Erie. That's what they call northeast. The northeast wines is this, you know, if you look on a map of Pennsylvania, you see the whole long state of Pennsylvania, and then you look on the far northern edge and actually the northwestern edge of the state, right up by New York and on Lake Erie. That's what they call the northeastern wines, and that's probably because there's a town there that's called Northeast, and so all the wines within that little area there. Some great diversity of wines. I found this one winery, Foxburg Wine Cellars, located in Foxburg. So it's rather easy to understand where they got their name. Right on Main Street, 65 Main Street in Foxburg. But what caught my eye on the Foxburg Wine Cellars is the variety of wines. They spend lots of time making wines. They have a designation that they do also. They label their wines. Now, if, Canadian wines label their wines from 0 to 5, I believe, is the top number. If you buy wine in Canada, there's a number on each wine. And that number tells you the dryness level, how sweet or how dry. If it's a 5, it's very sweet. If it's a 0, it's not. It's a dry wine. And it's in theory, it's a good practice. I'm not a big fan of it because there is no national rules or designations. There's nothing that says that they have to name it a 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. There's no. If this the country says, okay, if you put a label as a 1, the sugar levels have to be between here and here. If it's a 2, it has to be between here and here. A 3, a 4, a 5. And if it's a 5, it has to be at this sugar level. Well, there's no standards in the state or in the country. You can label it anything you want. If you've got a wine that's not moving because it's too dry, then just change the number. I mean, that's a sort of out there type explanation, but you can. There's nothing that says you can't. The reason I get into that is because the Foxburg Winery here put a little note on his wines. He labeled them. He labeled them sweetness levels from 0 to 8. So actually goes up quite higher than on that. But his red wines, he's got a Concord, which he labels 6. He's got a Fredonia, which is a 4. A Riverstone Red, which is a blend of red grapes. He calls it a melting pot wine. That's a 5. A Cherry Blossom Red with natural cherry and red grapes. That's a 5. Cran Grape, he names it the healthiest wine in the world. That's a 5. Marechal Foch. The Merlot of Pennsylvania grapes, you like to say, that's a 0. Princess Foch, that's a 4. Fox Fry, F-Y-R-E, that's a 3. A Chianti, his Chianti style, he labels. Chambourcin, which is a Cabernet character with a natural oak essence, a 0. A Lambruscata, Lambruscato, it's a Lambrusca blend. Grapes you're so used to hearing from that area, the Concords and all that. It's a 4. A Cabernet Sauvignon. He used some oak in it. He made himself a cab, 0. A sweet Cabernet Sauvignon. It says, discover the true taste of Cabernet grapes, slightly sweetened to bring the fruit forward. Now, if he says slightly sweetened, I wonder if he has added fruit to it or something. I tried to call him. The phone was busy, and I couldn't get a hold of him. He gave that a 5. He has a dry River Red. He gave it a 0, Syrah style wine for Pennsylvania. A River Queen, true dessert wine. He gave that an 8, and it's a red 8, fortified with pure brandy. So there you go. It's very easy. Could be a port, but obviously he's called it the River. Yep, it says the Port of Foxburg, a true dessert wine, a complex blend of grapes, blackberries, and elderberries. His white wines, a Niagara, gave it a 4. Saval, 1.5. you couldn't decide on a 1 or 2. It's 1.5. Riesling, a 2. Chardonnay, 0. Aurora, 1.5. Blush wines, Steuben, 4.5. Foxburg Blush, a 1. Pink Catawba, a 4.5. And a Moonlight Blush, a 1. Then you've got fruit wine. This is why I'm going through this list. You know how many I've sent. Strawberry Mist, gave it a 6. A cherry wine, a 7. A blueberry blush, a 7. A raspberry blush, a 6. A blackberry blush, a 6. Pear wine, an 8. Apple wine, a 5. And plum crazy, he calls it. Newest burst of pure fruit flavors and tickles your fancy. That's a 7 on his scale here. So he has himself quite a lot of wines, an unbelievable long list of wines here. He does fall festivals. He has a, in fact, he hasn't taken down his old fall festival thing, but he still has some pictures and stuff up there. But it's right downtown in Foxburg, Pennsylvania, which is in the northeast corner. But if you're into the fruit wines, you're into the, all the different varieties and stuff like that, he has them there for you. He has a variety. He's a total of 31 wines he offers. He's got a nice store. If you want to check out his website, it's Foxburg Wine, www.foxburgwine, FoxburgWine.com, FoxburgWine.com. And check out his wines and stuff. He can't ship to you. Again, the laws in the state, in Pennsylvania, he can't ship to you. But you might be able to work out something if you're going there or something. I don't know how you can get around it, if you even can. So, but if you want to get a hold of him, then you can call him at 724-659-0021, and you can get a hold of him. He is located right on the river in Foxburg, Pennsylvania. So another one I looked at, which this really caught my eye for some reason. This to me. Let me find it here. Is this the one? Yes. This is, I tried to call them, and they were, the young lady who answered in the tasting room says, "We're really busy. Can you call back?" And then I tried to call back, and I never got an answer. So they might have been really busy. But this is, the reason I call them Courtyard Wineries. And Courtyard Wineries, on their opening page, it says, "One unique winery, two extraordinary brands." And they make a brand called La Courette, L-A-C-O-U-R-E-T-T. And this is for varietals and exceptional taste quality. And then they make a Barjo or Barjo Bonds or Barjo Bonds. And this says unique blends for crazy friends. You look on the wines, and the La Courette has 6 wines that they offer. They have a Limburger, L-E-M-B-E-R-G-E-R. This is a grape that was originated in Austria, also known as the Blue Frankish, Blau Frankish, deep red wine, it says, with softer tannins than a Merlot, and a pepper nose, white pepper nose, he said, and smoky overtones. A residual sugar is less than 0.2%, so it's a rather dry style. Cabernet Sauvignon, this is, I'm trying to see where the grape comes from, and it doesn't say on this. Again, the residual sugar is 0.2%. He uses oak. Sack uses Pennsylvania oak in his wines. I would like to find where the Pennsylvania oak cooperage is made, so that would be interesting. He also has a Norette. Norette is a red wine grape variety that is produced, that is a product of the plant breeding program at Cornell University. And we talked to Cornell a few weeks back. The first seedlings were propagated in the 1970s, along with a lot of other, about 115 trials through the 80s. and it's released to New York and Pennsylvania growers for trials in 1994. In 2003, it was officially named and released for commercial wine grape production. So he has one here. Residual sugar on this one is also 0.2%. Might be an interesting wine. He does a Riesling, which rather low sugar, 1.3% sugar level on his Riesling. He does a Chardonnay, 0.5% on that. And he also does a Chardonnay. Again, this is an oak Chardonnay, and it's 14 months in an oak barrel, 0.1%. Those are the wines that he has under the Le Clairet, Clairet label. But then he also has wines under the Barrel Bonds label, and he has four under that. And this is a completely different. He says it's Ruby's Rouge. It says it's that woman can make anyone blush, and this is a blush wine. He suggests to have it with a BLT pizza. And the residual sugar is a 4.2, which is really, really pretty sweet on that. It uses the blend of Concord and Catawba with a surprise touch of peach. Again, yeah, a completely different style from his others. Instead of saying we got these and these, he just divides them up. He also has a Dazzle made with the Cayuga grapes and a touch of Niagara. Again, these are all grapes from up in that area and up in that type. It's suggested with a delicious cheese spread. Residual sugar on this one is way up to 4.0, which is rather high. Lazy Days, D-A-Z-E, is the next one that he has here. And it says, this bold selection is sure to strike a chord. It is a perfect combination of Fredonia and Steuben grapes. This sweet, dark red is sure to take you back to good memories and put a smile on your face. It is 6.5 residual sugar. That's you're looking at port type wine there. 6.5 is getting up there. That's a high residual sugar. And then his last one, called the Radiance, is a semi-sweet Vidal Blanc. And it's a 2.2 residual sugar on it. So two distinct lines and two distinct parts of the winery. I mean, it's just like he distinguishes the two, his fine line and his friend line. They are located, if you want to get a hold of them and want to check out their website. Their website is Courtyard Wineries. com, C-O-U-R-T-Y-A-R-D-W-I-N-E-R-I-E-S, courtyardwineries.com. Open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 6, noon to 5 on Sunday. And they are located in the northeast here. Let me get you a little bit more information here. Northeast, yeah, that's the town, Northeast Pennsylvania. It's right up in that little corner close to New York up there. And a Courtyard Winery. Just an interesting wines they have to offer there. And then one last one. I'm going to tell you about this. I'm not going to talk about this a lot right now because I think I can get somebody from this place. It's called Presque Isle Wine Cellars, P-R-E-S-Q-U-E, Presque Isle Wine Cellars, I-S-L-E. Presque Isle Wine Cellars. It's been around for quite some time. It shares with nearby Penn Shore Vineyards the distinction of being the first wineries to obtain Pennsylvania winery licenses following the enactment of the Limited Winery or the Farm Winery Act in 1968. It says, we and others began research on the practicality of restarting a wine industry in the state, which began in the 1820s, but which had died out because of disease problems and the rise of prohibition. A legislative effort was begun in 1968, and because of very fortuitous circumstances, a farm winery bill was passed in that same year. The Pennsylvania industry has grown to 173 licenses as of June 2010, with at least 125 of them reporting sales. And it says, we introduced the growing of Vitis vinifera grapes to the Lake Erie region in the late 1950s, and we participated in the successful effort to establish the Lake Erie American Viticultural Appellation, or AVA, in the early 1980s. Presque Isle, and the reason I'm sure I'm going to get somebody on here, not only do they have a winery, but Presque Isle also sells a lot of supplies, winemaking supplies. If you're a home winemaker, Presque Isle sells an awful lot of supplies. They have just about everything you need. I have bought stuff from them for my winery for years. We've dealt with them and bought different things. I've met most everyone there. You go to trade shows and stuff, and they always like to go to trade shows. They're great people, and they like to go to trade shows and everything. I will get them on the program. I didn't have enough time to get in touch with them and go through. They have a variety of wines. They have a dry red, dry white, sparkling wine, semi-dry reds and whites, spiced wines, sweet reds and sweet whites, and fruit wines and blush wines, and specialty wines of port and ice wines. So a little bit of everything that they do up there. Their 2009 Lake Erie Riesling Ice Wine is 375 milliliter bottle, sells for $44.34. And it says it's a true ice wine made from select Riesling grapes that were naturally frozen in the vineyard and picked December 20th at a temperature in the mid-teens. They only made 38 cases of it, and it says the ageability of it, greater than 5 years, which most ice wines will. Let's see, let me find average degree bricks at harvest. Now I want to see what the residual, 18% residual sugar sitting in it now. So, yeah, it's extremely high sugar on those things. So, but Presque Isle's cool. I get supplies from them. If you are into home winemaking, it's another great place to get a hold of supplies and books and stuff. They are always helpful. I have called them up, and when I've had problems with things, I call them up and I say, I have a problem, this is it. And they go, oh, well, you need to do this and that and this, or have you tried this and that and this? And they've helped me through quite a few problems, mostly minor, a couple of majors. So I like Presque Isle. I have one of their catalogs, and I use them quite often. So if you want to check out the website before we actually talk to them, you can always go to www.piwine.com. That's piwine.com, and that'll take you to Presque Isle. So we'll see what we can find next week on some more wineries in Pennsylvania. I'll send out a bunch of emails and invite them on the program, and we'll go from there and see what we can do. Before I forget, let me jump back. Courtyard Winery. On Catch Wine, a site that I use quite often, look up wines. They have a comment, and one person said, for the winery of Foxburg, which I just talked a little bit ago, it says, always so much fun and always good, always the wine is good. So it's just a major praise for it. Somebody else put on their five stars for the wine, winery ambience and stuff like that. There's Arrowhead Cellars. This one also, I had a couple comments I wanted to read on this. They talked about one person's favorite wine, their Fredonia and Apple. They said the wines went to the September Wine Fest. The wines were sweet and delicious. Another person says they are wonderful wines, and the gift shop is fantastic and great people. So some good comments on this about all these wineries we talked about tonight. But we will visit Pennsylvania again next week and probably for a number of weeks here. And we will be getting guests on. So if you're listening for guests for Pennsylvania, don't give up on us. If you have suggestions for port or sherry, email me. And
yeah, very good. All about wine 101 at gmail.com. Email. Okay. And, you know, any other topic, you know, related to wine, any other, you know, subject
questions,
related
anything.
To the, yes, questions that we can present on air, that'd be great. And we'll take it from there. Don't forget, you can also follow the show on Twitter. We have a Twitter account and a Facebook account. You can please like our page. Facebook has, I don't know, a couple of hundred users on it. And so we should
actually
get...
They're going to see it when they click on it. No, we have 25.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying Facebook as a whole has, you know, a couple hundred people using Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, at least a couple hundred people on there. So out of that, we should get a fairly good share. But
and also, I want to point out, too, if you are on Facebook, mm-hmm. the end of this month, they are changing the format. You're going to have a different look. And our All About Wine BTR is already presenting the new format. So
mm-hmm.
if you want to check that out, you can do that.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, definitely both of those. You can go to twitter.com or facebook.com / is All About Wine BTR. All About Wine BTR on either twitter.com or facebook.com. And those will take you to the Twitter page and the Facebook page. So you get, you know, sometimes we update it during the show or before the show. I know you're on Facebook quite a bit, updating the Facebook page with, you know, what we have coming up and all that. Very interesting. So definitely check us out on Facebook and Twitter. All About Wine BTR is the, you know, after the / on there. So I guess we have completed tonight's...
tonight's program. Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked a lot more about the new label designation, but it was something that... Yeah.
We one got thing led up to, in. Yeah, one thing led to another thing, and it's still, we still have questions. So,
yeah.
We do. Okay, well, I guess we will close the show for this evening, and I want to thank everybody for listening. I will give out information on Florida's premier winery, is Florida Estates Winery, located 4 miles west of I-75 on State Road 52. That's exit 285 here in Pasco County. So you want to make a visit. The weather has been fantastic. We were baking today at about 80-something degrees, but when you go outside there, you get underneath those giant oak trees, it's great shade and cool there. So definitely plan a visit and visit Florida Estates Winery, 25241 State Road 52. That is in Land O'Lakes, Florida, and the zip is 34639. For those of you with GPSs that... Sometimes it kind of helps if you have the zip. 25241 State Road 52, Land O'Lakes, Florida. You can phone, call the winery directly at area code 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. Or email the winery at corp@floon.com. corp@floon.com. Visit the website for more information, details on events, some photos there, all kinds of good stuff is on the website at www.floridaestateswines.com. Okay, floridaestateswines.com. Wineries open daily from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. They do tastings, retail sales. There's a great gift shop there, and it's just a fantastic place to, you know, you can shop for wine-related products. I picked up a cork opener. I don't know what the official term of it is, but there's a thing with the prongs on it. Works wonderful.
I've always called it. You get it to work, right?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah,
oh, I love
is.
That thing. I just want to get a whole bunch of bottles, you know. Maybe I'll go next door or something. Hey, you got anything I can open? Because I love this thing. I sit there and, you know, it's much better than that screw type one.
Yeah, and it's out.
Yeah, I've lost so many cork. Well, I still have the one cork in the one bottle, but oh well. But this thing here, I mean, yeah, whatever you call it, thing with the prongs, that is wonderful. Whoever invented that was a genius.
Yeah.
But very nice. Yes, and you can also, and you also have, you still have the grapeseed oil, right?
Yes, we do. Yes.
So yeah, there's all kinds of, and it's very healthy and it's very, very good. Yeah, very, very good stuff.
Looking
so,
at getting some balsamic vinegar in too.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh.
Neck. Yeah. Okay. And you do have the, you know, I haven't done the sangria mix yet.
Haven't?
That'll be,
no, that's,
you know,
that'll
be my next thing.
That's so simple.
I know. This says requires a red wine, and I've been drinking the red wine. And just, oh, kind of helps if I had some left over to.
Yeah.
Sangria. That is one. You know, when you get to the requirements, you're like, oh.
Oh, no.
Stop drinking this, but yeah, very good. So stop into Florida State's winery. And if you do visit the website, be sure to subscribe to the newsletter. It comes out about every 2 weeks and very informative. There's recipes, there's wine facts, show information, also about wine classes. Speaking of which, yeah, I'll get to that. You have a wine class Sunday, this coming Sunday, which is March.
March. You're as bad as I am getting the months wrong on it.
March 18th at 2 p.m., from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Florida State's Winery. So, yeah, definitely put that on your calendars and plan to attend wine class. It's a great 3 hours, very informative, very entertaining. You're really a great speaker in person. You know, that's really cool. And even the wine tastings and, you know, just a great presentation all around. So definitely do that and check it out. And there are openings for this Sunday, so it's really cool.
Yes.
Call the winery for more information, I guess. So you can do that over the phone, or there's more information on the website. And, you know, I guess we're good for this week. So next week we will be in Pennsylvania.
We'll continue to be in Pennsylvania.
Yes, for
hopefully
a while.
Have somebody talk to us from Pennsylvania.
Yes. But stay tuned, you know, to the Facebook page, definitely, because you do post, you know, Ron posts all kinds of information. I'm on there right now, but yeah, you post all kinds of information throughout the week about the shows and, you know, people that you've contacted and, you know, things like that. So, you know, like the Facebook page, and let's bring those numbers up and stay with us on there, because it is very informative there. So do that.
Also, if you like to rather receive tweets, then Mike does a good job of that, getting them out to you and everything, keeping you caught up on that stuff. So
there you go.
You can always join us that way too.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. I will we'll close the show, and thank you all for listening out there, whether it's live or on the archives. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and, thank you, everyone.
We'll see you all next week, next Thursday, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, and have a great
thank you. Good night.